Welcome to the Bring Her Hope podcast. I'm Bethany Bravery, and I am thrilled that you are here. Each week, I invite a girlfriend on the podcast to share not only the story that God is writing for her, but the story that God is redeeming in her life. And I cannot wait for you to meet each and every one of these amazing women who I know will inspire you to also live out the story that God is calling you to, and to give you hope that He will be faithful to redeem your story as well. My guest today is Alicia Marks. Alicia is a dynamic Bible teacher and author with an infectious love of Jesus, the scriptures, and people. She and her husband raise four kids and a menagerie of livestock in rural Oregon, where they are deeply involved in their local church. She is the author of The Matriarchs, Four Women Who Birthed a Nation and Changed History, and Elijah, Bold Obedience, and A Still Small Voice. After two devastating miscarriages, at 8 weeks pregnant, Alicia's baby was diagnosed incompatible with life. Throughout those horrific months, she learned what it truly means to trust God in real life. The dramatic ending to this story is only one that God could write. So, Alicia, take it away.
Well, they say that in the South that there's two different ways of telling a story, that regular fairy tales start with once upon a time, but a Southern story starts with, y'all ain't never going to believe this.
Absolutely.
And this is a story that you are never going to believe, except that God could do it, because it's impossible to make up. When we graduated from college, my husband, who's a mechanical and aerospace engineer, got a job in Huntsville, Alabama. We're from Oregon. And we moved. I had a 9-week-old baby and knew zero people in Alabama. And so we moved to Alabama, and that was hard because we didn't have anybody. My husband traveled constantly for work, and so he was really never there. I ended up having two children. Then I had two devastating miscarriages, and I got pregnant with my third baby. Of course, I was super excited about being pregnant. I went to my 8-week appointment, you know, the normal one where they just check the heartbeat and you get the little ultrasound, and they could not make the ultrasound machine work. And you know that after this was my fourth rodeo, or my fifth rodeo, I guess, with baby making. So when the ultrasound tech said to me, I'm not able to make this work. I'm going to go get another machine. I mean, red flags just started going off, because you know she's been using that machine all day and it's worked just fine. So she goes and she gets a different machine, and she tries, and she can't make that one work either. So she says in a very cheery voice, I'm going to go get the doctor, which you know are never good words. So the doctor comes, the doctor tries to see what she can see and says, I'm not exactly sure what's going on, but this doesn't look good or right. We can't make the machine work, and I'm sending you to a specialist. That was on Friday. She had me in at a specialist in Birmingham on Monday. That's how serious it was. So we went to the specialist, and the specialist looked and said, well, the first thing we're going to do is try to see if this baby has organs, because they could not make the machine work. They couldn't see anything. And I'm like, see if she has organs. I mean, this isn't good at all, obviously. And he goes, okay, so you have no amniotic fluid. And that's the reason that the ultrasound machines aren't working, because they need fluid in order to show you an image. And since you have no amniotic fluid, that means that something is very wrong with the baby. And here are your options of what could be wrong. Either she does not have a liver, or she does not have kidneys, or she doesn't have a liver and kidneys, or she has them, but they're not functioning and she's using yours. And any of those scenarios mean that as soon as she is born, she will die. And so we're kind of questioning him about this, because he also gave us a list of about 25 things that can cause this situation. I had zero of them. And so we're asking, like, is there any chance that this is going to fix itself? And he's like, no. When you're formed, you have organs or you don't. They work or they don't. That's it. And then he said, just very seriously, he goes, you need to prepare yourself that this is not going to end well. And then I left. And driving all the way back from Birmingham to Huntsville is about an hour and a half drive unless you hit traffic, and then it's about, you know, it can take forever. So I'm driving back just trying to process all of this, that I am now carrying a baby that's going to die if God does not intervene. And that scenario continued throughout the rest of my pregnancy. I saw that specialist and his ultrasound tech every week. I'm not really sure why they made me see him every week because nothing changed every week. But week after week, they would give me another ultrasound and say, nothing's different, nothing's different, nothing's different. And that was all that there was. And we just kept going. Now, I was pregnant in the summer in the South, in one of the hottest summers on record, with no one there. My husband spent the whole summer at the Army Research Lab, which is in Washington, D.C., doing research for the Department of Defense. And so I was literally at my house by myself with two little kids carrying a baby that was going to die if God did not intervene. And you know how people say God will not give you more than you can handle? Yeah. That is more than you can handle.
That is a lie from the pit of hell, basically.
Yes, that is. I mean, it's more than you can handle. Yeah. And I found myself just crying out to God, reaching out to God in every way, because if I did not, if I allowed my thoughts to overwhelm me, even for a short period of time, I would be on the ground crying because it was too much to carry this child. And so during that time, it was a horrible summer. It was the most horrible summer. However, during that horrible summer, I really pressed into God, and he was absolutely faithful all day long, every day. I read through the entire Bible. I mean, literally Genesis to Revelation that year. I listened to every sermon that our pastor in Oregon had ever archived on the website. I listened to every sermon that our new pastor in Alabama had ever archived. I had just got invited to a women's Bible study at the new church that we were at, and we were doing the Esther study by Beth Moore. And we were poor, so we just had the CDs, not the DVDs for it.
Yeah.
And somebody had to be in charge of carrying around the CDs from week to week, and I ended up being in charge of that. So I listened to those over and over and over again. I can quote verbatim pieces of that Bible study. And the interesting thing was is that a lot of what God was speaking to me through his word, through teachers, through pastors, really didn't have anything particularly to do with my situation. I mean, there's no actual verses in the Bible about when you are pregnant with a baby who's going to die, here's what I have to say to you.
Yeah.
That's not really what it was, but it was just God speaking. And it didn't even have to be exactly about my situation right then. It was just God speaking. And that is what kept me going. I'm telling you, if I wouldn't have had that, I may have done something drastic because it was terrible. It was a terrible summer. Fast forward a little bit. So we were in this new church where we didn't know anyone hardly, but we told our small group the situation and they prayed for us. And they kept praying for us. And then somebody told the worship pastor that this was going on. And it was a pretty large church. By Oregon standards, it's certainly a large church. And so you don't always know all the pastors and everything because it was kind of a biggish church. So I didn't really know the worship pastor very well, but he had our entire choir just lay hands on me and pray for me. And those types of things were really how the church helped me. And I know that it's really popular to complain about all of the things that the church does wrong, but I'm going to tell you what my new church, who didn't know me at all, did for me that helped me during this time. That first appointment, my husband couldn't be there at the specialist. He was in Washington, D.C. So one of the ladies that was in my Bible study, who didn't know me, who had two little children of her own at home, said, I'm going to drive with you. And I was like, no, that's okay. You know, I don't need you to do that. That's such a long drive. You have to find somebody to watch your kids. It's very complicated. She's like, I'm going to drive with you. And she just showed up at my house and drove me. And that day I had to be gone. I had no one to watch my children. I don't have a mother there or anything. So they were just going to go with me. And another girl said, oh, I'll watch your kids for you. I'll come over to your house and watch your kids while you're gone. These people did not hardly know me. They knew I'd never be able to pay them back. This had nothing to do with, like, you watch my kids for the weekend and I'll watch yours someday. They knew I'd probably never be able to pay them back, but they did it anyway. And they faithfully prayed for us. And we got through that summer. I got through that summer. And that church really did such a great job of just loving me well and helping me and doing everything that you can do for a woman in my situation, and they were the biggest blessing in the world to me, and they helped get me through. Well, then fast forward, we're getting really late into my pregnancy. It's so hot in the South. I'm miserable because I'm now pregnant and hot with a baby that's going to die. And so I was at the gym one day and I was just really struggling, and I was swimming because that could, you know, cool me down and buoyant some of my baby belly. So I was just swimming laps back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I was just crying, literally crying, and praying at the same time. And I just finally got done, and I got in the shower at the gym, and I laid my head against the stones that were in the shower on the wall. And I just had a conversation out loud with the devil. I don't know if anyone else was in that area, but I'm sure that they thought I was nuts. But I just told the devil, I said these words. I just kept thinking about the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And I said out loud to him, I said, it doesn't matter what happens. Mm-hmm. If I get thrown into this blazing furnace and I deliver this baby and it dies, the God I serve is able to deliver me, mm-hmm. and he will deliver me. But even if he does not, amen. I'm going to serve him no matter what. And I just told the devil that out loud. And then I went home. And I think it was right after that that I had another ultrasound. And it's like I'm at like 35 weeks at this point. I mean, it's very, very far along. And I go into the ultrasound for the same story, second verse, or actually like 30th verse. It was, you know, because this has been going on for so long. And all of a sudden, my belly was full of fluid, and the baby was completely normal sized, and they could see everything. And so the ultrasound tech, who had seen me week after week, month after month, runs out to get the special. He comes in, looks at the ultrasound machine and said, well, that doesn't just happen, and walked out. He had just no explanation for what he was seeing right there, because that absolutely does not happen. But then I had her at 37 weeks. She is perfectly normal, perfectly healthy, and just turned 8 years old. Wow. And so God absolutely healed her.
Oh, incredible. Alicia, so going back to even the season of first finding out, and you, one thing that you kind of mentioned often is that you were reaching out into community, and it sounded like instead of isolating. So speak to the lady who's listening right now, and maybe she is walking through something similar, where she has a diagnosis or she has something going on in her life where it seems like there's no way it's going to turn around, and she's isolating. What would you say to her?
Well, I'll speak to that lady, and then I'm going to speak to the other ladies, okay, that might be in her church. Yeah. So to the first lady, absolutely, it was a chance for us to tell our small group what was going on, mm-hmm. because we didn't know them hardly at all. We hadn't been going to that church for very long. It could have been, you know, it could have been an awkward situation, but we just did it anyway because we were desperate. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes you just have to reach out because you're desperate. And so that, I mean, I would just really encourage you to have courage, find someone or a group or, you know, a community of Bible study women that you can reach out to in those situations. I mean, then just have the courage to do it. It may not always end up the way that mine did, but do it anyway and keep going until you find community, because if you're going through something like that, you can't do it by yourself. It's not possible. I would have died without my church family, I think. And then I'll speak to the other women. You're going to have other women who are in these types of situations. And in the South, I think there's a different culture where it maybe was a little bit easier for me because people are friendly there and people are they're outgoing and they're, you know, like you can meet them at the grocery store for the first time. And when you leave 27 seconds later, they hug you. So it's a little bit different there, but try to be that a little bit here. Make your community that you're in something that somebody who's in crisis could come and be honest and say, hey, would you pray with me about this? Mm-hmm. Make it open for that. And some of that's going to mean that you have to be vulnerable too, but also some of it's going to mean that you're going to have to then, if that happens, step up and do something that's going to cost you something a little bit. You know, those two women that helped me, those were inconvenient days for them. They had to find people to watch their own kids. They had to waste the day with me. You know, they couldn't get any of the other work that they wanted to get done that day because they gave that day up for me. When you have little kids, you know that that's actually a sacrifice. But we're going to have to do that too in our groups. When people come and they're honest with us and they're hurting, we may have to give up some of our time. We may have to give up some of our resources. We may have to spend some mental energy thinking about what we can do to help. And we just have to be willing to help other women when they're in these crisis situations. So that's kind of what I would say to both of those groups of women.
Were you feeling movement in your belly this whole pregnancy?
Yes. This child does not stop moving now.
Yeah.
And she, you know, every pregnancy is different. With my son, who I'd had just before her, he would take naps and he would sleep for a while and I would get a break. This child never stopped moving. And so I was aware that I was pregnant with her every single second. And that was challenging because there was never a second when I could feel like when I could forget about it for a while or anything like that. So yes, definitely.
So on a day-to-day basis, let's talk about like your expectations versus your reality. You kind of had to live in both. You were hoping to be expectant on the Lord, trusting that whatever the outcome is, you would trust him, but also hoping for a miracle. And at the same time, you had to live the reality by going to the appointments. So how did you balance your day-to-day life? And I know it is messy, so balance is probably not even the right word. I'm not even asking for the to-do list. But on a day-to-day, how were you able to kind of keep those two in flux, the expectations, the reality, and even your hope?
So I'm not going to say that I did this perfectly all the time, but here's what I did on the days when it worked. I stayed in scripture. There was not a day when I did not do my devotions, when I was not reading through the Bible, when I was not listening to sermons online, when I was not reading commentaries or something. I was not in an emotional state where I had the strength to not be relying on God every single second. And you're right that I did have this big tension because I'll tell you something, I'm hook, line, and sinker believing that God can do anything. I absolutely do. There's never, and I have always been that way. I've always really believed that, that God absolutely has the power and the ability to come through for me. So I 100% of the time believed that God was able to heal my child. Now, I had also just had two miscarriages. I'm fully aware that God does not always heal. Maybe God doesn't even mostly heal all the time. You know what I'm saying? And so so all I could do was just fall on God's mercy, trust that even if she died, because that's what the doctors were telling me was going to happen. I mean, there was literally no hope. If she died, that somehow God would work that out for us, for our family, and for me. And so I had to live believing that, and I had to live believing every second that God might heal her. And really, those verses that I told you from the book of Daniel were what I held on to, because when you're standing in front of the fire and you have no power. And there's other situations where sometimes we have power and what we're doing is, you know, praying for wisdom or praying for this or for that. But when you're standing in front of that fiery furnace and you have no power, I could not control my situation at all. Any more than Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego could have changed their situation. I had no power. You just have to stand there and with all of your heart, that's when you find out. That's where the rubber meets the road. And you have to say, God, either I trust you or I don't. Either way, no matter what happens. And being in scripture was really what helped me be able to stand in that tension because I kept seeing the faithfulness of God over and over and over again. And in scripture, a lot of times things don't work out the way that people would have liked it to, and God was still faithful. And you just have to fall on God's mercy and believe in his faithfulness every single second.
For those ladies that are walking through something where a diagnosis or something feels like it's overwhelming them to the fact that they feel like they can't even be present in their own story. I mean, you had 9 months to where you still had to be a mom, you still had to be a wife, you were a friend, you were, you know, all of the things, all the hats that you wear. Was it hard for you to be present in the current story that you were living, knowing that that was kind of all happening at once. And if it, of course, it would have been hard, but were there ways that you could kind of navigate it, set it aside for a little bit, or was it just kind of always in the back of your mind?
I would say it was always in the front of my mind. It was never gone, not for one second. I mean, I guess there's that moment when you realize that at least at some point it's going to end, because, you know, you're pregnant for 9 months. So one way or the other, this won't go on forever. But it was always there. But I also had a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And so there is no second when you do not have to be present when you have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. They just, you know, 2-year-olds are demanding, and that just is what it is. And so it was just like, there was just no option. It was all messy. It was all together, just like almost all the time it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially for women. I mean, I don't know any woman who gets to just.
Right.
maybe relax in their crisis. I mean, there's just this, you always have to keep going.
Alicia, how would you say that your life has changed as a result of this miracle?
Oh my goodness. So it was the worst summer in the history of the world for me. However, what I will say is that my spiritual life exponentially expanded after that. Just during that, actually. And if the baby would have died, if Adeline would not have been here, I would have still had that spiritual growth during that time, and it wouldn't have been wasted. But I'll tell you some other really neat things that happened because of this. This has given me a lot of opportunities in ministry that I would never have had otherwise. And I'll tell you just an example of one of them. So a couple of years after I had had my child, a player for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' wife got pregnant. And their child was also incompatible with life. And because they were public people, they made a statement on Facebook that said, here's the situation. Now, her baby did not have the same thing my baby had. Hers had the brain outside of the skull. And so it wasn't the same situation as mine, but the ending was going to be the same if God did not intervene. And so they had just written something on Facebook that said, this is the situation we have chosen because we trust God with our situations. We're not going to have an abortion, but we just want you to know that because we're public people and you'll be aware that my wife is pregnant, and then there might not be a baby at the end, that we're just telling you what has happened. And I just randomly read that post on Facebook. And then I started reading the comments. And the comments were atrocious. There were so many people saying, it's cruel to that baby to let it live. You should abort it now before it has to go through the pain of birth and then a painful death. I mean, many, many, many people said that. And so I am just a mom at my house, okay? That's all I am at that point. And I was pregnant with my fourth at this point. And I was actually about to deliver my fourth. And all I did was comment on that post. I said, I just told what happened to my baby. And I said, I would have never, I never wished that I'd had an abortion. Would it have saved me some pain in the short term? Maybe. I don't know. Probably would have still been terrible and painful. But if I would have intervened and taken over God's job, yeah, he couldn't. He couldn't have intervened on my behalf because I would have overran him. And so I told that story, and all he did was write that comment. And many people started commenting back. I got some really terrible ones, but I also got some really good ones. But the most important one was from the magazine editor. And she said, yeah, I'm going to need that story by Friday.
Wow.
And so I literally had my baby on Wednesday. I think that was like a Monday. And I had my next baby on Wednesday, was sitting holding my next baby in the hospital with my laptop on my belly, writing this story so that I could send it to her for her to publish on Friday. I also got discharged on Friday. So I went home and we sat on the couch with my four kids and me, and we watched. They put this thing online, and we couldn't even, the clicks that were happening on it were so fast, we couldn't even watch it. Or we couldn't even keep up with it. I couldn't even keep up with the comments on it, the people liking it and sharing it. And literally thousands of times over the next 48 hours, that story got shared. And it's been shared lots of times since then. But if I had not had this horrifying, terrible experience that I would never want to have again, I would have never had that opportunity. You know what I'm saying? To speak into people. And then I actually have a story where I can tell women who are in crisis situations, with pregnancy particularly, do not intervene. Look what happened. Mm-hmm. Look at God's faithfulness. I'm always a little bit terrified when I look at my child, because it would have been so easy to just say, I'm not going to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have an abortion and be done with it. She's not going to live anyway. And that absolutely, I could have done that. Mm-hmm. But if I would have done that, I would not have my child.
Incredible. Gosh, a couple things from even what you just said that I want to encourage ladies that are listening today is, Alicia, you had the courage to share your story in the middle of your story. And I highlight that to say, oftentimes it's easier for us to share our story 10 years later when it's wrapped up with a pretty bow, but you were coming to your church community and you were in the middle of it. You had no idea what the outcome was, but you were willing to be vulnerable with that. And then also to be willing to share it online. And I'm not saying everybody needs to go out online and share their story, but God uses our story in mighty, mighty ways. And it's evident that is exactly what he's doing. And then also, Alicia, one thing that you kept kind of pointing out is that you had to release the control of our story. You know, I don't know what any of you are walking through right now, but we want to pick up that pen and we want to do the writing. And we think sometimes that we're the best author of our story. And really, if we trust God, the outcome that he's going to present is going to be so much more beautiful than anything that we could ever write. So sometimes we just need to be reminded to put down the pen. Oh, my goodness.
Absolutely. And honestly, I'll tell you that I haven't sought out anything around this story. What I have done is I have responded when God's dropped something in my lap. And I think that that's key. When God is leading you, when God is guiding, then there's blessing and there's success. I haven't tried to make anything happen because of the story. Now, lots of things have happened, but I've never tried to make it happen. I've just let God guide. And when he opened up doors of opportunity, I then stepped into it. And I think that that's I didn't set out being wise enough to think about that and to make that happen. But looking back, I can see that that is what happened. And God was just faithful. All it is, this is just the mercy of God all the way around.
No, that's great wisdom. I'm glad you added that on for sure. Alicia, if you could sit down with your 20-year-old self, what would you say to her today?
Trust God with everything, with process, with outcomes, everything. Trust God, and not just because I'm telling you to, not just because the Bible tells you to, but trust God because he is trustworthy. Our pastor said something a few months ago that has really resonated with me all of these months later. He said, it would be a tragedy if I, in the end of my life, was holding my grandchildren ready to die and I had no great stories to tell them about God's work. And I thought, that's absolutely true. And I think that a lot of us are, we're afraid to ask God for big things. We're afraid to, and I think that it's because our intentions are good. If he says no, we don't want people to know that we asked for this big thing and then God didn't show up for us.
Yeah.
But that's not our responsibility. God, doing what we want him to do or not should not dictate whether or not we're asking for big things and believing for God to do big things. This is a story that our family will always have. This is a story that you can't take away and that you can't give anyone glory to except for God. And so when we tell this story, there's nothing that we did. There's nothing that doctors did. There was no medicine. There was nothing. It was God. And so we need to be praying for those stories in our families. We have to have something to give down to the next generation that we can share with our children and our grandchildren and say, look at the faithfulness of God. He is so faithful. And here's an example in our family of when that happened. Be bold enough to pray that. Absolutely be bold enough to pray about it. And then do not fail to tell your children, to tell your grandchildren, to tell people when God gives you the opportunity of the great things that he's done. Because that's how we pass down our faith to the next generation. We give them something until they have their own stories that they can then tell their children.
Alicia, what's something that you are impassioned about these days?
Always Bible study. Absolutely always Bible study. And relationships that are built around Bible study. I love community Bible studies. I love Bible studies in people's houses. I love Bible study in churches. I love Bible study, and I love the relationships around Bible study. There's a lot of things that we do in women's ministry, and because I'm in women's ministry in a variety of different ways, I'm often given these opportunities to do fun things that women like to do together. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's fun. That can build relationships. But I found that the relationships that really stick, that really matter, are relationships that are built, community that's built around Bible study. So when you have a Bible study group that is together for a certain amount of time and you've gone through some stuff together with each other and you've been able to pray about it together and seek God through His Word together, that is a different level of relationship than you can get any other way. And so I'm always passionate about Bible study. I have written 2 Bible studies and taped them, so there's videos that go with them also, and I'm working on my 3rd one. I wrote 1 on Elijah, 1 on the matriarchs, which is Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah, and I'm in the process of writing 1 on Moses. And those are just really fun ways to get a group together. Not everybody has the gift of teaching. Not everybody has the time to do that. But if you have a DVD that will teach for you for 20 minutes, then you can lead the discussion time, and anybody can do that. And so that's really what I want to do, is just give women resources that they can take and build their own communities around Bible study.
That's awesome. And can they find those resources at comethirstyministry.com?
Absolutely. You can also follow me on Facebook, which is Facebook/ComeThirstyMinistry. I'm also on Twitter, which is AliciaMarks1 at Twitter. But yeah, it's easy to find these. You can also Google my name, and you'll be able to find a lot of my resources if you can't remember the long ministry name. But yeah, that's where you can find everything that I've just talked about.
Wonderful. And we will make sure and have those in the show notes. So if you guys go to whatever podcast platform you're listening to on this, this will have the show notes with all the links that we just talked about as well. Hey girl, thank you so much. I appreciate your transparency and your vulnerability to share your story. And I know that it's going to impact so many women. So I appreciate you.
Oh, thanks. I pray that it does. Thanks so much.
Oh my goodness. Alicia's story was so inspiring. I love what she said to encourage us to cling to God and be desperately dependent upon Him. Hey friend, if you are enjoying this podcast, then the best way to let us know that is by taking a moment to give us a review. By giving us a review, it allows us to keep bringing you more content each week. Also, if you love this week's podcast, then take a screenshot of it and post it on Instagram and tag us, Bringing Her Hope. We always love to know who's listening. We cannot wait to share another story of God's redemption next time. But until then, lovelies, keep living brave stories for Jesus.